Hello, my friends. It's Friday, April 18th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. Hello, my friends, and welcome to the program. So glad to have you here today. So much to get to, and of course, the top story on everyone's mind is the success of Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland in meeting with the Maryland man who was illegally abducted, kidnapped, and renditioned to the El Salvadorian torture gulag. Kilmar Abrego Garcia is alive. We'll tell you all of the details. Then we're going to take some time to debunk all of the gaslighting coming out from the administration, which is so desperate to put in the minds of the American people that Kilmar Abrego Garcia was some terrible, heinous, wife-beating MS-13 human trafficking gang member. We'll debunk all of that, and we'll get you informed about the next name you'll have to remember, Meryl Gutierrez, who was abducted when an ICE agent was looking for someone else, and they said, take him anyway. The horror being visited upon this man's father is just indescribable. Then, speaking of undescribable horror, I had briefly mentioned yesterday we hadn't heard much from mass shooters. I should have kept my mouth shut because there was a mass shooter at Florida State University yesterday, and who it turns out to be and what weapon he used will shock you. Also, I've got more updates on a story I broke for you yesterday about the Doge boys doing a wholesale data dump of the National Labor Relations Board. I've got the testimony from the whistleblower now, and it's even more shocking than I initially reported. Then we'll take time for our Boycott Idaho segment, where the mayor of Boise is going head-to-head with the attorney general of Idaho over the city's continued flying of the gay pride flag. You know there's a law against that in Idaho? I'm going to tell you all about it. And then, in the Radical Rant, I'm going to remind you that tomorrow is protest day, April 19th, get out on the streets, look up online, check Facebook, find out where you need to be. The protests 2 weeks ago were huge. This week's needs to be even larger. So get your signs ready and I'll meet you out there. But before we get to all that, I want to talk about a little thing I found the other day. I was out working out at Costco, doing some shopping there, and I had to use the restroom. Went in there into the stall, and sitting there on the toilet paper dispenser was a little booklet. And a little booklet had a cartoon picture of a biker on it with a rebel flag behind him, and it said, Bad Bob. And taped to the front of it was a penny, and someone had taken this penny and cut out or stamped out a cross in it. And so I immediately recognized what this was. This is one of those little booklets from Chick Publications. Maybe you've seen them in telephone booths or at a restaurant booth or in a bathroom stall. These are these little propaganda booklets that proselytize for the Christian religion. They're put out by this guy, Chick Publications, out of Ontario, California, and he produces millions of them. Like, I've seen so many different versions of the Bad Bob. It's always a little cartoon. At the end, someone finds Jesus and they're saved and all that, which is great. I'm fine with that. Express yourself. Use your First Amendment right. Use your freedom of press. I guess it is a bit of litter. Technically speaking, you are littering, but it's not the worst thing in the world, right? Little cartoon to fill your day and get the word of Jesus, right? Got no problem with that. My problem is, why don't we have that for the secular left? Where is the Chick Publications for the secular left that teaches things like have a little cartoon? You remember like the old Schoolhouse Rock we Gen X kids grew up with? How about an I'm Just a Bill, but in a little booklet form, or, you know, the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or what our civil rights are or what your rights are in a police encounter or all these things that are a part of our civic life. Why don't we have the same sort of evangelical fervor that right-wing Christians do into getting that message out, into proselytizing our vision of the world to the masses? So I'm out there asking, if there's any millionaires or billionaires out there that want to put together a Chick Publications for the left that teaches about basic civics and American history, with a real look at American history, let me know. I'll be glad to put this together. I just need some funding and some artists. I would love to be the Chick Publications of the left. We're all thrilled to be able to report that Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland was successful in his visit to El Salvador. He met with the vice president there discussing the Kilmar Abrego Garcia case. And as of yesterday's podcast, when I was recording, it was looking like it was going to be a failure. It looked like he was going to come home empty handed. But as the day wound down, we got word that Chris Van Hollen was granted a meeting with Kilmar Abrego Garcia, in a meeting that was highly staged. They had Kilmar in a brand new pressed shirt and what appeared to be a brand new Super Bowl Kansas City Chiefs hat, looking very dapper, very clean, very well kept. And it reminds me of how we've had propaganda that come out from, say, Russia or North Korea when someone's captured, and they always want to put them out looking their best. Don't worry, nothing bad is happening here. But it's still good news that we know that he's alive. There was some question as to whether or not he was, with all the stalling and delay that had been put forth by both the Trump administration and Bukele in giving us any information about his whereabouts and his condition. But he does appear to be healthy, does appear to be in decent spirits, I guess. And that's great news, but I want to talk this morning a bit about the reactions to this, because first of all, this is the absolute bare minimum, to know that the man is alive. He needs to be brought back to the United States. He has been living in the United States for 14 years. He's married. He's got three kids. He's got no criminal record that they can dredge up at all, either in the United States or in El Salvador. And we're throwing up our hands on this side, you know, President Trump and the White House saying, oh, well, my goodness, there's nothing we can do. He's in El Salvador. He's subject to El Salvador's rule. We're completely powerless to do anything to bring him back. Nothing we can do against the sovereign nation of El Salvador. Oh, sure, we'll take over Canada and Greenland and the Panama Canal and Gaza and fight trade wars with China and the EU. But El Salvador, no, we don't want to anger them. Not the mighty El Salvador. And then Bukele, of course, throwing up his hands on the other side. Oh, there's nothing I can do to get rid of him. The United States wants him here. They're paying us to keep him here. We can't let him go. Of course, you know that if this guy's name wasn't Abrego Garcia, if this guy's name was Wentworth or Trump, they'd be bringing him back immediately. Of course, someone named Wentworth or Trump would have never been sent there in the first place because he's too white and delightsome, isn't he? Well, let me talk about some of the reactions to this, because President Bukele of El Salvador posted on social media about this event, and they with the picture of Van Hollen and Abrego Garcia and his vice president all sitting at a table, and the table got some glasses of water and maybe appears a mug of coffee sitting there. And this is the tweet that Nayib Bukele, the president of El Salvador, tweeted with three pictures of the gentlemen all meeting. He writes, Kilmar Abrego Garcia, miraculously risen from the death camps and torture, now sipping margaritas with Senator Van Hollen in the tropical paradise of El Salvador. And then a little margarita emoji. And he wrote death camps and torture in scare quotes. So that's why I said him that way. He's being mocking. He's trying to make the point that, oh, look at how healthy this guy is. Look at the clean shirt he's in, the nice hat he's in. This is no, we don't have death camps. We don't have torture. And then he quote tweeted that and added, now that he's been confirmed healthy, he gets the honor of staying in El Salvador's custody, with the emojis of American flag, handshake, and El Salvador flag. Okay, so you're going to mock us, huh? You're going to mock us for calling your place a death camp where people are subject to torture. You think that's funny? Well, then there's a real simple way to prove that, Bukele. Open up your prison to journalists. Let some journalists go through there. Show how humane your prison is. Show us how nobody's suffering, how there's no torture in your prison. And you yourself, Bukele, have said that once someone goes into that prison, they never come out. That means they die there, right? So this would be a camp in which there is some death, right? Oh man, this guy, I can't wait until we get a Democratic administration back into the White House and we can do some, sanctions on El Salvador. I know what we're going to have to do after this is over. That was one reaction. Another one of the reactions I want to get to is from the White House's official account. This is really disgusting. So the White House tweeted out the picture of the New York Times front page breaking news. The New York Times front page breaking news said in their headline with the picture of Van Hollen and Abrigo Garcia there. The headline reads, Senator meets with wrongly deported Maryland man in El Salvador. And what the White House did is used red pen to cross out wrongly, to cross out Maryland man and replace it with MS-13 illegal alien. And then after the in El Salvador part, they wrote, who's never coming back? So that the headline now reads with the crossouts and the edits, Senator meets with deported MS-13 illegal alien in El Salvador who's never coming back. And then they add the caption, fixed it for you at New York Times. And oh, by the way, at Chris Van Hollen, he's not coming back. This is our White House making a mockery of the complete destruction of this man's life. Of the horror that his wife and children are going through. And an absolute mockery of our justice system. The man was not supposed to be deported. There was an order to not deport him. So if you deport him after that, he is wrongly deported. If the guy lives in Maryland for 14 years and pays taxes to the state of Maryland for 14 years, he's a Maryland man. He is not an MS-13 illegal alien. You've never proven at any step of this that he is involved with MS-13 in any way. And even if he was, he still deserves due process. Go to court and prove it. If you've got such a slam dunk case that this guy deserves to be treated in the worst way possible, prove it. But they know they can't prove it. They know they can't. And I'll tell you a little bit later, we're going to go through the facts of this. I'll go one by one, every claim that this administration is making, trying to poison the public discourse about Kilmer Abrigo Garcia. We'll get to all the facts, but I want to cover some of these other reactions first. This one, let me just give you this quote from the Washington Post. Asked about the Abrigo Garcia case yesterday, California Governor Gavin Newsom, another 2028 presidential prospect, called it a, quote, distraction, end quote, and shifted focus back to the lawsuit he was announcing against the administration's trade policies. Quote, it's exactly the debate they want, Newsom told reporters, because they don't want this debate on the tariffs. They don't want to be accountable to markets today, end quote. Kilmer Abrigo Garcia's abduction and holding in a El Salvador torture death camp is a distraction? Oh, I see. So the White House has called up ICE to round up every Venezuelan with brown skin and tattoos and ship them out without due process to distract us all from tariffs. What a brilliant plan. I know, let's ruin a few hundred people's lives as a distraction. A distraction. What the hell has happened to Gavin Newsom? First, he starts his podcast where he's platforming Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon. And now he's calling the most high profile case in the nation that has gathered the attention of everyone worldwide is a distraction from the tariffs debate. Why would we want to discuss some poor brown kid locked up down in El Salvador when the markets are angry? The graph of rich people's feelings is down. Well, we better get to the important parts here. Oh, man. I swear to God, if 2028 comes around and the DNC puts up Gavin Newsom and Gretchen Whitmer as our nominees, this country is over. Another reaction that I wanted to get to was this reaction from the Washington Post that says, the case of a Maryland man who was illegally deported to a notorious prison in El Salvador is confronting conservatives with a clash of two long-held principles, fighting illegal immigration and defending personal liberties. Yeah, that's what we all know conservatives for. Defending personal liberties. Boy, when I think of someone's personal right to free speech, to gather peaceably, to assemble, to petition their government for a redress of grievances, woo, it's conservatives that are top of my mind. Oh, those stalwart defenders of personal liberties. When there's someone who's fighting a case against the police where they've broken into their house without a warrant, or where someone's been coerced into a confession, boy, it's those conservatives that are right out there defending personal liberties, isn't it? Boy, when someone's being put into a jail cell, given a cruel and unusual punishment, boy, it's those conservatives that are right out there defending their personal liberties. And there's a violation of the 13th, 14th, or 15th Amendment. Someone's civil rights are being violated because they're black or they're gay or they're trans or they're a woman. Ooh, boy, it's those conservatives front and center, right in the battle. God, give me a break. Yeah, the deportation's dividing conservatives between the ones who love what's going on and the ones who love what's going on but think it might make them look bad. That's the divide that's happening among conservatives here. Jesus Christ. Washington Post. My God, both sides. All right, so those are the reactions. Let me take a break here and get you some of the facts. With more attention being dedicated to the case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the White House and Fox News and Newsmax and all the conservative propaganda organs are working overtime to try to fix this terrible PR disaster for them of deporting a man for no reason for the allegations he was part of MS-13. They're trying to play that up. They did a couple of things yesterday. They released a 2019 booking sheet of him being alleged to be part of MS-13 and a 2021 domestic violence report that was filed by his wife. So I wanted to go through the facts on this in case you hear some of this nonsense being spouted out on Facebook amongst your friends or on the TV, give you some of the facts behind this case coming from a couple of sources. First of all, we'll go to USA Today to debunk the statement by Pam Bondi, the attorney general. She said, quote, in 2019, two courts, an immigration court and an appellate immigration court, ruled that Abrego Garcia was a member of MS-13. That is not at all what happened. Here's the story. Back in 2019, Abrego Garcia was caught up at a Home Depot in Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C., looking for day labor. He's hanging out with four guys. And they turns out two of the guys were active MS-13 members found with a couple small bottles of marijuana, a little plastic, probably a little film container bottles of marijuana. Found them loitering in the parking lot. Abrego Garcia was amongst these guys. So they determined that he had to be a member of MS-13 because he was hanging out with these guys and He was wearing a Chicago Bulls hat, which is apparently the MS-13 uniform, right? A Chicago Bulls hat. Nobody else would wear a Chicago Bulls hat unless they were MS-13, right? And he was wearing a hoodie. And the hoodie had rolls of money covering the eyes, ears, and mouth of the presidents on the separate denominations. So because this hoodie had pictures of money on it, and he's wearing a Chicago Bulls hat, and he's standing in a parking lot with other Hispanic men looking for day labor, and two of them are MS-13, well then, guilt by association, he has to be an MS-13 member. So this report relied on a confidential informant, a snitch. This snitch, who was an active member of MS-13, says that Abrego Garcia was an active member of MS-13 under the name Chele, and he was part of the Westerns clique of MS-13. The Westerns clique. Now, his attorneys point out that the Westerns clique is based in Long Island, New York. Nowhere near where Abrego Garcia was caught, and a place where Abrego Garcia has never lived. The report was filed by Prince George's County Police Detective Ivan Mendez, who was suspended from the police department days after Abrego Garcia's arrest. He pleaded guilty to misconduct. Local prosecutors placed him on a do not call list because they deemed him an unreliable witness. So that's your answer, Pam Bondi. He was not denied, not ruled a member of MS-13. What happened in these immigration courts is the guy gets arrested, and then, of course, the lawyer asks for bond. And bond is posted only if they can find that he's not a flight risk or a danger to the community. In the court proceedings, they said, Garcia failed to meet his burden to show he is not a danger. And they denied him bail. And they denied bail at the appellate court level. That is not the same as declaring that he's a member of MS-13. All that is saying is these courts did not find that he could meet his burden to show he was not a danger to the community. So they're taking the denial of bond and saying that means he was declared a member of MS-13, and that is not at all what happens. Now, going to Stephen Miller, the other day in the White House, he declared, when President Trump declared MS-13 to be a foreign terrorist organization, that meant that Abrego Garcia was no longer eligible under federal law for any form of immigration relief in the United States. Now, what this is referring to is the fact that Abrego Garcia is from El Salvador, and he did come into the country illegally, the immigration judge ruled he should not be deported. There was a do not deport order on him because they determined that if he went back to El Salvador, he would be in danger of being killed by these same gangs that they're saying he's a member of. So there was a do not deport order that Stephen Miller says, once President Trump said MS-13 is a foreign terrorist organization, he's no longer eligible for that do not deport order. But again, Trump says MS-13 is a terrorist organization, but nobody has bothered to prove that he's a member of MS-13. If they had gone to court and proven he's a member of MS-13, then yes, that do not deport order would be null and void. Since they never proved that, that do not deport order is still in effect, and they broke it. Then President Bukele in the Oval Office stated that trying to return Abrego Garcia to the U.S. would be like, quote, smuggling a terrorist into the United States, end quote. Once again, there's no proof that Abrego Garcia is a terrorist. Just because he was standing in a parking lot with three other guys and he was wearing a Bulls hat and a money hoodie does not make him MS-13. And he's being held in that prison at our request. He's not committed any crimes in El Salvador. Bukele could release him right now and grant him humanitarian parole and allow the Supreme Court's 9-0 order that they facilitate, that the United States government facilitates his return, let that order take effect. Then there's Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who I will never fail to remind you was approved 99-0. Every single Democrat voted for Marco Rubio, who said, quote, "This individual is a citizen of El Salvador. He was illegally in the United States and was returned to his country. That's where you deport people, back to their country of origin." Well, that's misleading. Yes, generally people are deported to their country of origin or another country that will accept them, but that is not the case for Abrego Garcia because he, again, had that do not deport order, which prevents people from being deported to their home country and allows them to legally work in the United States. Now, you can deport these people with a do not deport order to another country. If they really wanted to get rid of them, they could have deported him to somewhere other than El Salvador. The one place they could not deport him to was El Salvador. The reason they put this order out is because when he was a kid living in El Salvador, Abrego Garcia was recruited by the gangs, and they extorted money from his mother and started threatening him with death as a kid. That's why he fled El Salvador and came to America. Another quote from Stephen Miller. This is the biggest bit of gaslighting of the year. When Stephen Miller says, quote, "We won the Supreme Court case 9-0, and people like CNN are portraying it as a loss." Complete gaslighting. The Supreme Court ruled the U.S. government has to facilitate Abrego Garcia's release from custody in El Salvador and ensure that his case is handled as it would have been had he not been improperly sent to El Salvador. The Supreme Court also asked the lower court to clarify its directive with due regard for the deference owed to the executive branch in the conduct of foreign affairs. They must, and then the lower court says they must facilitate and effectuate Abrego Garcia's release. The government has failed to comply with the court order. The court has been ordering them to submit daily updates on his return and what steps they are taking to facilitate his return, and they have ignored the court day after day after day. Those are the facts of the Kilmer Abrego Garcia case. He's never been adjudicated to be a member of MS-13. He should be returned immediately. And the other part of the case they're trying to smear him with is a domestic violence order. There's a 2021 domestic violence protective order that was requested by his wife, Jennifer Vasquez Sura, after they had a fight. They had a domestic abuse. Abrego punched and scratched her, ripped off her shirt, grabbed and bruised her. So, she has told USA Today in a statement she acted out of caution after a disagreement in filing the temporary protective order, which was closed a month after she filed it, saying, quote, "After surviving domestic violence in a previous relationship, I acted out of caution after a disagreement with Kilmer by seeking a civil protective order in case things escalated. Things did not escalate, and I decided not to follow through with the civil court process." So, the wife was scared. They had a fight. She was let him know she was not going to put up with that. She reports it to the authorities, as she should. And that apparently was enough to bring this situation to a close. Apparently that was enough for Kilmer Abrego Garcia to get his shit together. And by all accounts, they are happy together now. Or were, until he was illegally abducted, kidnapped, and renditioned to a foreign concentration death camp. So, Harrison Fields, Deputy White House Press Secretary, responded by saying the question is jaw-dropping and wondering, is being a wife-beater not enough? He was here illegally. Being a wife-beater, not enough. Well, I'll tell you, if being a wife beater is some reason we have to deport people from this country to a concentration camp, you better line up Donald Trump, because his first wife, Ivana, you know, the one he buried in an unmarked grave on his golf course, the one that took like 10 pallbearers to haul her casket because, gosh, she was so heavy, there couldn't have been anything else in that casket. Yeah, so Ivana wrote in her memoirs how Trump beat her and ripped hair out of her skull and raped her. So if we're going to start deporting wife beaters who are known members of criminal organizations, it's time to send Trump to El Salvador. The next name we all need to learn in this debacle, this nightmare of abductions and kidnappings in our name with our tax dollars to be sent to an El Salvadorian gulag, the next name we all need to learn is Merrill Gutierrez, 19-year-old boy from the Bronx who's been disappeared by ICE. As the story goes, the young man, Gutierrez, met with his friend to get some help doing some errands at the American Red Cross. When his son was on his way back, just steps from the home, ICE agents grabbed Merrill Gutierrez. And according to Luis, his friend who saw it happen, quote, "The officers grabbed him and two other boys right at the entrance to our building. One said, 'No, he's not the one,' like they were looking for someone else. But the other said, 'Take him anyway.'" Take him anyway. That's the due process that Merrill Gutierrez got from the ICE agents. Take him anyway. He's not the one we're looking for, but take him anyway. 19 years old and tattoo free. Not a tattoo on this kid's body. Supposedly the Venezuelans with tattoos are the ones that are deadly MS-13 gang members, but not this kid. No criminal record, absolutely innocent, returning home from errands, grabbed by ICE, who was looking for someone else. CBS's 60 Minutes found that 75% of the Venezuelans now imprisoned in our terror death camp had no criminal record. No criminal record at all. And a fourth of the rest of them, their criminal record was minor, like, you know, jaywalking or, you know, disturbing the peace or what have you, loitering. And even the three quarters of the quarter that are criminals of some terrible sort still deserve due process. This is the United States of America. We don't just grab people off the street on the word of some disgraced informant, or the fact that they have a hoodie and a bull's cap, or the fact that they're Venezuelan and have tattoos, and just lock them up. We don't do that. That's not what America is about. So Merrill Gutierrez is the next name, the next person who needs to be freed, along with all of them. His poor father, Wilmer, says, quote, "I feel like my son was kidnapped. I've spent countless hours searching for him, going from one precinct to the other, speaking with numerous people who kept referring me elsewhere. Yet after all this, no one has given me any information or provided a single document about this case." ICE is just going door to door, place to place, school to school, church to church, trying to round up brown people for their mass deportations now. If only there had been some sort of sign. Oh yeah, there was. Hundreds of them held up at the Republican National Convention. So for all you MAGAs out there who are trying to cover up your embarrassment for this, at least the ones of you who aren't the sickos who are jacking off to it, that I didn't vote for this. Well, this isn't what I voted for. Bullshit, they held the signs up in the convention. I don't know how many times those on the left had to bring it up, that this is shades of Nazi Germany. Identify the other, demonize them, dehumanize them, ship them off to death camps. This is not the United States of America that I signed up to defend. This is not the United States of America that I swore an oath to, whose flag I pledged allegiance to, who some of my friends died for. And I'm not going to stop until this entire administration and everyone who facilitated this unspeakable evil horror in our name is brought to justice. And hopefully that's at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And one other thing here. I don't know if you saw the video of the redheaded guy with the beard in the flak jacket using the axe to bust open someone's car window to drag them out. Been reported this guy isn't really even ICE. He's part of some volunteer vigilante group called Veterans on Patrol. A militia leader from Arizona brought up into New England to bust out people's windows and terrorize them. Well, Homeland Security responded to that. Homeland Security says, quote, in a tweet, they say, quote, "The rumor is circulating on social media that ICE Boston employed a militia leader from Arizona to make arrests in New England are not only false, but they are also inflammatory and place the safety of federal officers in jeopardy. Our ICE officers are facing a 300% increase in assaults while carrying out enforcement operations." A 300% increase in assaults on ICE officers. I find that terrible. I think that is awful. Come on, people. We can do better than that. Boy, just when yesterday I was making a sly remark about how we haven't heard very much about mass shootings lately, that maybe the disasters that are unfolding at a national level have just kept them under the radar. Well, I guess I spoke too soon, because yesterday we got news of a mass shooting at Florida State University, where initial reports, one dead and I think it was six injured at the campus on Florida State. Numerous videos coming out showing students running for their lives, running for safety. And the reports coming out now are that the shooter was shot but taken alive, and he's been identified as the son of one of the county sheriffs. That's right. One of the county sheriff's kids is the mass shooter at Florida State University and perpetrated the crime with a service weapon. The cop's kid used a cop's gun in the mass shooting. I am going to be so interested to see how this plays out. Because you'll remember the case that took place in Michigan, was it last year or the year before? Where the parents were convicted for allowing their child to have unfettered access to the gun. Now, we are talking about Florida, where I believe you're issued a gun when you graduate from high school. Okay, that's not true, but it might as well be. So the cop who should know better, who should know to keep a weapon secured, left that weapon unsecured for their kid to get it and kill people. If this cop is not brought up on the same charges as that couple in Michigan, then there's something desperately going wrong with our justice system. Now, I know this brings up the gun debate. A lot of people have a lot of opinions on that. I'll let you know mine. All guns and all drugs should be legal, but they should be regulated commensurate to their potential for harm to self and society. Okay? So, you want some pot or some whippets or you want a BB gun or an air pistol? Have at it. Very unlikely it's going to harm you to any great deal or harm anyone else to any great deal. You want some PCP and an M60 machine gun? There's going to be some paperwork and oversight, okay? And then regulate everything else in between. I still think it's far too easy in this country to get your hands on a gun, but it shouldn't be impossible to get your hands on a gun. I think that having a gun ought to be regulated somewhat like having a car. You ought to be tested on a fairly frequent basis. There ought to be liability insurance that you have to maintain for your gun. There should be direct responsibility if your gun is used in the commission of a crime, whether you're using it or not. There should be definite accountability for that. With great power comes great responsibility. It seems like all the Second Amendment fans out there like the great power part. Ooh, I want to have a bunch of guns. I want to have a bunch of guns. But they don't like the great responsibility part. Having to go to the range and be tested. Having to get a psychological evaluation. Having to have references from close family members. Whatever it is that we might want to put out there. There should be much, much more regulation on guns. But I would still allow everyone to have them. In fact, I would allow people to have more types of guns than we allow right now. I would allow someone to have M60 machine guns. I'd allow someone to have light anti-tank weapons. But there's going to be some paperwork. There's going to be some oversight. We're going to keep tabs on a person like that. I feel so bad for the parents of the students out there. And I can't imagine being a parent these days and just knowing your kid could go to school one day and get shot. And some of these kids in Florida State, it's their second mass shooting. Some of them went to the what was it, Parkdale, Parkview, the place in Florida that got shot up. How much longer does this need to occur? And also, I think when we talk about the gun issue, it's tempting to get mired in the gun itself. You know, how do we regulate the gun and the person's access to gun and getting the gun? And right wingers, they'll always bring up, well, it's a mental health issue. It's a mental health issue. You know, like they don't have crazy people in Japan or Europe or Australia or whatever, right? Sure, mental health is involved. To me, it's an act of desperation when someone does something like this. It's someone who's got nothing left to lose. So what we need to do is start giving people stuff to lose. Build up our social safety net. Provide free health care, and especially free mental health care. Provide basic subsistence housing and universal basic income and Medicare for all, and maybe people with something to live for, people who can see that there's some sort of hope, people who see that there's a country that actually cares whether or not they live or die, maybe then we'd see a reduction in some of these mass shootings. Yesterday, I gave you a few details on the story of how DOGE had broken into the National Labor Relations Board and basically ported off all of our sensitive data on unions, union organizers, workers, and such, ported it out so Russia could get a hold of it. Well, now comes more detail in the protected whistleblower disclosure to Bill Cassidy, the chairman of the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and Bernie Sanders, who's the ranking member on that same committee. Also to the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, which goes to James Comer. You'll remember Comer. And Gerald Connolly, the guy the Democrats gave that position to instead of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So these are the two relevant committees with oversight on this issue. And the whistleblower's report, I'll just give you the breakdown on this from MattJ.com. Matt Johansson writes this up on Blue Sky. A federal whistleblower just dropped one of the most disturbing cybersecurity disclosures I've ever read. He's saying DOGE came in, data went out, and Russians started attempting logins with new valid DOGE passwords. The whistleblower is Daniel Baroulis. He's a senior DevSecOps architect with the National Labor Relations Board, formerly with TSSCI clearance. That'd be top secret, secret compartment information, development security operations. So he's a security programmer, basically. Anyway, he just told Congress the Department of Government Efficiency pulled off a covert cyber op inside a federal agency. DOGE demanded root access to the NLRB data. Not auditor access, not administrative access. They were given what is called tenant owner privileges, full control over the NLRB's cloud, above the rank of even the chief information officer himself. The CIO of NLRB can't get the level of access DOGE was granted to their data cloud. Then, once they got the access, they disabled the logs. Berulis said DOGE demanded account creation with no record keeping. They even ordered security controls bypassed and disabled tools like Network Watcher so their actions wouldn't be logged. So they are secretly creating accounts with no record of who created the account, who accessed the account, nothing. No record keeping whatsoever. After that happened, the data started flowing out, a 10 gigabyte spike in outbound traffic. No corresponding inbound traffic. They used an external library for data scraping and brute force attacks. They downloaded external tools that the NLRB does not use. They're using outside hacking tools. Within 15 minutes of the DOGE accounts being created, attackers in Russia tried logging in using these new credentials with correct usernames and passwords. Which means either the DOGE cloud was hacked, or, more likely, DOGE just went and gave those usernames and passwords to the Russians. They disabled multi-factor authentication. You know what that is. That's where when you try to log in with something and then your phone responds, hey, you got to put in this 6-digit code we're going to text to you. They disabled that. Downloaded the conditional access rules. Turned off multi-function authentication for mobile devices. Not approved, and of course, not logged in any of the security logs. Then, as this whistleblower is preparing all of this information, he found a drone surveillance photo of himself taped to his front door with a threatening note. At this point, he decides that he better call in the big guns, U.S. CERT and CISA's Cyber Response Team. These are our top cybersecurity defenders, basically. But then senior officials told them to stand down. No report, no investigation from our top cybersecurity agencies. This is the crime of the century. This is Elon Musk committing the greatest act of treachery the United States has ever suffered. It's hard for me to even express what a huge crime this is, since it's all digital, it's all computer stuff with fancy nicknames and acronyms and jargon and tech speak that I know it's going to fly over a lot of people's heads. But this is walking into Fort Knox, throwing open the vault doors, and helping the Russians back their trucks up to load the gold in. That's the level of crime we're talking about here. This is a massive, massive breach of data security, a massive theft of sensitive information. And this is all from the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board. So we're talking about companies that might be trying to unionize workers that are being abused in the workplace, information on the leaders of different companies and so forth. Information that will be easily weaponized against the United States of America. When this Trump era is over and we return Democrats to power, Elon Musk needs to be brought up on high treason charges, as well as every one of these DOGE boys. Because I'm telling you, if you know anything about computers, you know anything about IT and security, the minute someone tells you to turn off the logs, to turn off multi-factor authentication, you can't be ignorant in that circumstance. You know, criming is going on. And I was just following orders, ain't going to cut it. Didn't cut it in Nuremberg, not going to cut it here. Elon Musk is a traitor to this country. All right, time for our Boycott Idaho segment, the segment where I remind you to avoid the handmade state. Now up to 63 reasons why you should avoid the handmade state. You can find them all at radicalrus.com/Idaho. And I would ask you to consider boycotting the Idaho potato. Do without the Idaho potato. There is no one red state more singularly associated with one single product than Idaho and the potato. Let's hit them where it hurts. Get rid of those fries. Get onion rings instead. Skip the loaded baked potato. You can do it. Come on, join me in boycotting Idaho. Let's let these red states feel the economic hit from the blue states no longer subsidizing their anti-American backward regressive ways. And talking about anti-American and backward today, I wanted to bring you this story of a fight that's brewing between the state attorney general, Raul Labrador, and he's a Republican, of course, and the mayor of Boise, the largest city and capital of the state, the mayor, Lauren McClain, who is a Democrat. And this year, the Idaho legislators, they had a vexing problem they had to solve. See, there were some places in the state, including Boise, that were flying the rainbow flag, the symbol of gay pride. So determined that visitors to the handmade state shouldn't confuse Idaho as a place that would be welcoming of gay people, they went and passed House Bill 96, which only allows the American flag, the Idaho flag, the city flag, and military flags to be displayed on any government entity, any property of any government entity. No other flags, which of course bans the pride flag. Well, the problem for the legislators today is they failed to include any enforcement mechanism in House Bill 96, so that flying the gay pride flag, as the city of Boise continues to do, may be illegal, but there's no arrest, fine, or jail term that can be issued for violating that law. This has angered the Republican Attorney General Raul Labrador. Now, you might remember him from an earlier segment where he filed an amicus brief with the U.S. Supreme Court to encourage them to nationally ban gender-affirming healthcare for trans kids, like Idaho has. Yeah, this guy, he wrote to Boise Mayor Lauren McClain, quote, "Though you are required to govern the city in accordance with the law, you have instead chosen to defy the legislature and to act as though your personal political views exempt you from compliance." So, Raul Labrador, the AG, has threatened that in the next legislative session, the Republican lawmakers will add some enforcement mechanisms to the pride flag ban. He suggests that they pass a law like House Bill 22 from 2023. What was going on back then? Well, in 2022, as you know, the Dobbs decision ended the protection of Roe v. Wade and the right of women to seek abortion health care. Idaho had a trigger law in effect, which as soon as Roe v. Wade went under, Idaho's abortion ban went into effect. Idaho has one of the strictest abortion bans in the nation, with no abortions allowed in any circumstance except for rape, incest, or the imminent threat to the life of the mother. And I've told you how the rape and incest exceptions don't work, because you have to report the rape to the police, and if you're a minor, you have to get the parent's permission to do a rape kit. So not much working there as far as the exceptions go. So when that trigger law went into effect and abortion was effectively banned in Idaho, the city of Boise directed its police force to make enforcement of anti-abortion laws its lowest police priority. It's kind of similar to what we've done with drug laws, where we'd say make marijuana enforcement the lowest priority. It doesn't make it legal, doesn't end the prosecution for it. It just tells the cops, don't waste your time on this unless there's nothing better to do. So, angered by that, in 2023, the legislators passed House Bill 22, which takes state tax money away from the city of Boise for not enforcing the abortion ban. So he's threatening a similar law to take away state tax money from the city of Boise if it won't take down its pride flag. And in addition to this ban in this House Bill 96, making it illegal to fly a pride flag at City Hall, it also bans flags all along the 15 blocks of historic Harrison Boulevard. Now, having lived in Boise for years, Harrison Boulevard is just a beautiful, beautiful street. It's one of them streets that's got a median in the middle of it. So one direction of traffic's on one side, one direction's on the other side. And for 15 blocks, it's nothing but trees and just beautiful green median. And on either side, the houses are some of the biggest, most beautiful, oldest historic houses in Boise. I'm telling you, Christmas time, going up and down Harrison Boulevard is just a delight. It's amazing. Halloween, these guys are great as well. They got all the decorations out. It's one of the sights to be seen in Boise. And it's located in Boise's North End, which historically, the Boise North End is where all the liberals live. Like, every liberal in Idaho lives there, pretty much. Not, I'm exaggerating a bit, but it's well known to be the liberal part of Boise. So, during every Pride month, there's Pride flags for 15 blocks, as far as the eye can see, down this boulevard. Well, turns out that median is managed by the Ada County Highway District, and since they're a governmental entity, the House Bill 96 bans the flying of the Pride flags there, too. Now, when the Republicans were passing this law, House Bill 96, to ban the Pride flags, a Republican senator explained why this ban was important. He said, quote, "The ultimate goal is for us to fly flags that unite and don't divide." Which really drills down to the whole problem that the Republicans have in this national crusade against diversity, equity, and inclusion. They believe that somehow recognizing a group that's been historically marginalized, be they gay people, trans people, black people, immigrant people, disabled people, if we somehow have a flag that recognizes this subgroup that's been discriminated against and marginalized, they think that divides us. Well, in a sense, I guess they're right. It divides those of us who want to end their marginalization and welcome them into the larger whole of society from those of us who do not, like the Idaho Republicans who want to keep the white Christian straight male at the top of the pyramid and everyone else knowing their place. All right, time for a little radical rant, and not so much ranting today as encouragement. I want to encourage everyone listening to get out to your protest tomorrow. April 19th, Saturday, is the second of the scheduled protests by Individual and 5051, a couple of the groups that are behind putting this on, at the state capitals and major metro areas all around the country. We had about 5.2 million people nationwide showing up for these protests 2 weeks ago. I was out at the one in Medford, Oregon, Jackson County, Oregon, a red county in Oregon, and thousands showed up. It was wonderful. We lined four blocks, both sides of the street, dozens and dozens of signs, got news coverage. It was fantastic. And if you've not been to a protest before, I encourage you to get out to one. Please do so. And remember a few things. First of all, understand that as these protests grow, there are going to be efforts by those who don't like these protests, the administration in particular, and the right-wingers that support them. They're going to do what they can to disrupt these protests. You're going to see agent provocateurs, people trying to start shit, be it fights or burning things or breaking things. It's important that those of us who are in these protests recognize these agent provocateurs and stop them and shut them down before they make the rest of us look bad. This needs to be nonviolent and peaceful as possible. The minute it degrades into violence, we lose. They can win that fight. They can win the fight of violence. The fight of morality, they cannot win. We must stand there, making our moral stand, and do so in a nonviolent way. I also want to encourage you to understand your legal rights. These protests may break down into getting some police involvement. You need to understand your rights. You do not speak to cops. Do not talk to cops. Shut your damn mouth. Observe your right to remain silent. Demand that you will not answer any questions without an attorney present. And it wouldn't be a bad idea, before you go out to a protest, to write down on your arm in Sharpie marker the number of an attorney or legal support in case things go south. Because in this day and age, nobody remembers anybody's phone number. The other thing to recall in going to a protest, turn your phone off. Turn your phone off. Everything that can be tracked through your phone, the metadata, this is the kind of stuff that the authorities can get their hands on these days that tell you where you were, when you were. So if they're going to start cracking down on protests, part of the way they'll do that is going through cell phone records. So turn your phone off. And it would also behoove you to learn a little bit about phone security and how the cops can access your phone. If you've got a phone that has Face ID, you know, where you just hold the phone up to your face and it opens up, cops can do that when they arrest you. They don't need a warrant after they've arrested you to hold your phone up to your face, unlock it, and start looking through it. Same goes if you got fingerprint access to your phone, where you just put your thumb on the thumbprint recognizer, whatever. Don't do that. Don't let your phone be opened by your thumbprint, because again, once they've arrested you, they can take your thumbprints, and it doesn't matter where they take them, either on the blotter sheet or on the screen of your phone. They're legally allowed to do that. They can open your phone without your permission by pressing your thumb up against it. The one way the cops can't get into your phone is by forcing you to reveal your password. If your phone unlocks with a password, they cannot make you tell them what the password is. So I would encourage everyone to set up your phones now, take off the Face ID, take off the fingerprint recognition for opening the phone. Now, you can still keep your thumbprint for, you know, getting into websites and passwords and bank accounts. You might not want to, might not be a great idea, but to get to that, your phone would have to be unlocked in the first place. And I already told you, when you're at the protest, turn off your phone. But protest tomorrow, get out there and make a show of force, because as we are starting to see, these bullies are cowards and paper tigers that back down the minute they are confronted. They were saying nobody would ever see Kilmar Abrego Garcia until Chris Van Hollen went down there and demanded it. We need more strong actions like these, stepping forth into their faces and letting them know that we do not approve of what's going on. And there is strength in numbers. I'm telling you, you go out to these protests, you will have a great time. You'll meet all sorts of interesting people. Protest now, while you still can. All right, that's all the time we've got for the podcast this morning. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belleville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com and nowhere else. And now for your post-credits screen. Have you noticed songs are getting shorter? I came upon this interesting article from Digital Musical News that says why songs seem shorter and why it's more complicated than you think. Points out that according to the 2024 Year in Music report, the average Spotify charting song was around 3 minutes long, nearly 15 seconds shorter than 2023 and 30 seconds shorter than 2019. And they analyzed what may be the issue behind this, and it has something to do with Spotify. It grants a royalty payment after the first 30 seconds of a song have been listened to. So the theory here is that artists are packing their songs. They're kind of front loading them with the chorus up front. And so people will get hooked on the song and listen to it for at least 30 seconds. And by that time, they don't have the long intros like they used to in the past. Interesting stuff. And the article goes on to detail how the song lengths have changed over time, going back to the doo-wop era of the 50s, and how the song length was dictated at first by the 78 RPM record and then by the 45 RPM. And there was only, you could only fit 3.5 or 4 minutes on one of those records. And then as LPs came in and you got 22 minutes aside, that's when you start seeing, you know, Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd making some of these longer 6, 7, 8 minute songs. And then we get to the CD era where songs can even get longer. But as things went to MP3 and downloads, in the early days of LimeWire and doing those Napster-type downloads, the download speeds were slow. So the smaller or shorter a song was, the quicker you could download it, and that kind of pushed the songs once again to being shorter. It's a fascinating look. I encourage you all to take a look at it. Just look up digitalmusicnews.com, and I think they'll have that on their front page. The story again is why songs seem shorter and why it's more complicated than you think. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. You're growing, you're growing.